You are listening to the Passion City Church DC podcast. To learn more about Passion City Church DC, including our location and gathering times, visit us online at passioncitychurch.com/DC. Today's talk comes from Pastor Ben Stewart and is a continuation of a series entitled Survival Skills.
Well, several years ago, I had the opportunity to navigate an obstacle course on a Navy SEAL base. I was honored to get to visit the base, and they brought me to this O course, and it was a water O course, which is essentially a series of ropes and nets hanging from a ceiling far above a swimming pool. So the idea is that you just sort of negotiate it the best you can until your forearms give out and you plummet into your failure. And so when I got there, the way it starts is you climb up on this high dive and there's a rope that leads to a cargo net. And I'm like, okay, the idea is you grab this rope and kind of Tarzan swing over and then grab this cargo net. So I'm getting ready to do that. And the Navy SEAL that's guiding me through this was like, hey man, I know what you're thinking. You're going to try to Tarzan swing. It's not going to work. The logistics aren't there. You're just going to hit the water. He's like, here's what you're going to need to do. When you jump off the high dive, jump, throw your head back, wrap your foot around the rope. You'll be swinging backwards and upside down, but as you approach the cargo net, release and you'll grab it. And I was like, I'm sorry, what? Like, I've only been on like one high dive in life. You know what I mean? I'm like, it's big enough that I'm standing up here and you want me to throw my head backwards on top of this thing? I'm like, I'm not doing it. And that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard. So I decided my wisdom, he doesn't know what he's talking about. So I got this. So I was like, I'll just choke up a little on the rope. So I choke up and I'm like, I got it. And I Tarzan swing, bam, hit the water. And I remember when I hit the water, I was legitimately confused. I'm like, dude, what happened? I thought I had it. I just thought I had the angle. And I got out of there and I stood in the pool for a while and I was frustrated because I was like, I don't want to look stupid in front of these guys. You know what I mean? So I'm like, dude, I got to figure this out. Maybe if I like jump and climb the rope and then swing. And I'm sitting there like trying to computate it in my mind. Like, I can do this. I'm not a fool. I know what I'm saying. I've got some brains in here. I can figure this out. And then after a while it hit me. Ben, maybe you should just try it his way. He did help design the thing. So I got up there and it was scary. But I was like, all right. Grabbed the rope, jumped, threw my head backwards, wrapped my foot around it. I'm swinging backwards and upside down. I'm like, this feels like a huge mistake. But sure enough, you're hugging the rope at that point and you're swinging upside down and backwards. And as you're hugging this big rope, as you come up, you just sort of crest and there's the cargo net. And I'm like, oh my gosh. And so I release and the energy of it's throwing me to the net. And I just went, cling, and grabbed it easily. And I was like, that was incredible. I can't believe this. I'm amazing. And then it struck me, why am I so surprised? He's a Navy SEAL. So maybe listening to the advice of a Navy SEAL when you're negotiating a Navy SEAL obstacle course doesn't make you a genius, right? But it does give you success. And I realized, man, the key to success was the humility to get over myself. And that humility opened me up to counsel. And that counsel made me wise. And that wisdom led me to the cargo net. But not much further because my forearms gave out. But that's another thing. Right? Now, why am I saying all that? Because that's where we're talking about in this series. We're talking about wisdom. And we talked about it last week that the word wisdom has different synonyms in this book of wisdom, Proverbs. Knowledge, insight, prudence. Knowledge is I understand a world. Insight is I understand the distinctions of how it works. And prudence is I know how to work well within it. That's what he said. He's like, I know how physics works. I know how this O course works. And I know how to negotiate it. He had the skill on this O course. But this, in this book, it's about the skill of living. That I understand how the world works. I know the subtle distinctions of how it works. And then I know how to operate within it to be successful. And this whole idea in the book of Proverbs, it works off some general ideas that this universe has some fixed laws. It has physical laws. If you eat only junk food, you'll gain weight, right? If you flip upside down on a rope, the physics will allow you to grab the cargo net, right? These are just fixed laws about the universe, right? If you leap off a cliff, you're gonna fall. But there's not just physical laws, there's social ones too. If you're always mean, you won't have many friends. If you lie habitually, people won't trust you. And so there's these laws, physically, laws socially. Why? Because underneath them all is a law spiritually. There's laws to the way the world runs. Why? Because there's a lawgiver. There's a guy who made it. And so last week we looked at that the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. It's looking at the person who knows the course better. It's sitting with the guy who designed it and saying, I don't have sufficient knowledge of this course. I don't know the distinctives of how it works. And I certainly don't know how to work well within it. But if I can listen to the one who made it, then I can take the steps that will lead me to soar. Do you see it? So the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. Now, it's interesting. There's a tension in the book of Proverbs. Proverbs chapter 1, where we ended, it says the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. But in Proverbs 4, if you've been reading along with us in our scripture study, which if you haven't, you can. You just text into 99000 the word Proverbs, and we'll send you some Proverbs every day and make you wiser if you want it. I'd recommend it. But Proverbs chapter 4, where we are, says the beginning of wisdom is get wisdom. And then it says, wisdom will lead you to the fear of the Lord. And so it's an interesting tension. You're like, well, then which comes first? Fear of the Lord leads me to wisdom, or wisdom leads me to the fear of the Lord? Which is it? And the answer is yes. You could say it this way. Let's say you wake up and it's another day where you're like, I just feel lethargic. I just feel like my energy level's garbage. I don't like the way I look in the mirror. And then you just, the truth hits you. I'm out of shape. I'm out of shape, man. What do you start doing at that moment? For some of you, you start conversating. You just find that friend that you go, hey, what are you eating? Yeah, where do you go to lunch? Do you order salads? What do you get on that salad? Do you get the cheese or do you want to cut the cheese? You just start doing some research. You find a fit person and say like, hey, do you work out in the town? I'm looking for a gym, blah, blah, blah. You start gathering some data. And maybe after a while, you find that person who's a physical specimen and you go, what are you doing? And you go talk to them and they go, I got this trainer. He's amazing. He put me in the best shape of his life. I can do an Ironman and then do another one again tomorrow. It's absolutely unbelievable. And you're like, oh, wow, okay. And so you go and maybe you even watch that trainer work other people out. Now, at that moment, are you in shape? No. Are you on the path to getting in shape? Kinda. It got you this far, but you're not really on the path. The only way to really step onto the road of getting in shape is what? Submit to the leadership of the one who knows how to get you there, right? It's that courage to be humble that will lead you to the fitness you want, right? It's the same idea here. As you start to seek wisdom, hey, maybe I don't know how the world works best. You know, honestly, maybe the way I treat people works about a third of the time. And I'm realizing now, though, that I've hit a certain level in my career where it doesn't work about two-thirds of the time. Maybe I really don't know how to manage money well. Hey, maybe I'm not as great at dating as I thought. This is another round that pretty much ended the same way. Maybe I don't know. And so that leads you to start seeking wisdom. It's going to lead you to the maker of the world. But what's going to really make you wise, give you success, is submitting to him. Humility is the path to wisdom. Do you see it? That's what people understand in recovery ministries. They usually start with Alcoholics Anonymous. I admit my life is unmanageable. I can't manage it, but I believe there's a higher power who can lead me to sanity. It's humility that leads to wisdom. Do you see it? So that was basically last week. We defined wisdom, saw the attractiveness of it, and then talked about how we're to embrace it. Now, what I want to do with the remaining time we have today is talk about this. What if you don't? What if you're like, okay, I could submit to the Lord, listen to his word, get some discipline and humility as I follow him, or that sounds like a hassle. I'm gonna do me. How's that gonna work? Where's that gonna go? That's where we're going today, right? And as we do that, you're really gonna get in the book of Proverbs two paths, the path of wisdom or the rejection of wisdom. There's not really a third path. Either I'm gonna listen to how the Lord says to run the world or I'm gonna run it my way. That's kind of how it works. So we're gonna see there's two roads. There's two promises, promised rewards. There's recruits that follow on these roads. And then we're gonna look at the end results. And so we look at the two roads. You see it in verse 15 of the passage we read earlier. It says, my son, do not walk in the way with them. Hold back your foot from their paths. Do you hear the metaphor? Ways, paths, roads. That shows up about 100 times in the book of Proverbs. And it's a great image, great metaphor that communicates it. There's a course to life, and I make choices, and they lead to consequences. That's the world we live in. There's a course, I make choices, and those lead to consequences. A path is a great idea to talk about it. Little steps end up writing your story, right? Little decisions lead a direction that shape a destiny. They do. That's life. And so a path is a good metaphor to kind of present two worldviews, two philosophies, right? Mentally, I load thoughts. These shape beliefs. Beliefs shape actions. Actions shape a life. That's the world. And what Proverbs is going to say is there's basically two paths, and both paths have promoters. Both roads have recruiters. If you're standing at the crossroads, there's people on either road saying, get over here, come this way, this road's awesome, you gotta see this. Both sides have them. And in the book of Proverbs, you see on the wise path, it's the parents and Lady Wisdom. Wisdom personified as a woman. And then on the foolish path, you got the gang, the peer group, the bros, and Lady Folly, or sometimes she's presented as the seductress, right? So you got these two deals. And each path promises rewards. I mean, you saw it in the text, the path of wisdom. He says in verse 8, hear, my son, your father's instruction. Forsake not your mother's teaching. They are a graceful garland for your head and a pendant for your neck. A garland was a symbol of victory that you would wear like a crown. It was for kingdoms, or for kings. A pendant, Egyptian judges wore those. It was a symbol of a life of exemplary service. What he's saying is, if you walk and listen to my wisdom, son, and follow my teaching, if you listen to what I'm saying about how this world works and you work well within it, you will have a skillful life. And at the end, you will be honored in the community. People will honor you. Proverbs 3 says, long life is in wisdom's hand. In her left hand are riches and honor. Humility, discipline, submission to the Lord, genuine care for people will lead you to an honored and successful life. But then if you notice in the text wasn't super upbeat. I didn't hear a lot of amens from the crowd. Swift to shed blood. Like, not a lot of y'all getting fired up while I was reading the text. Because a lot of it is about this other path, the path of the fool, which is basically, hey, let's go kill somebody and take their money. Which I know some of you hear that and you go, Ben, that's not my greatest temptation today, right? You go, I'm dealing with some stuff. That's not really it. I'm not really like, should I kill some people and take their money? Some of us are maybe thinking about that. Not all of us are. But here's the deal. You can read that and go, okay, this is a little dramatic. I'm doing a pretty good job of avoiding that one. But if you read further in the book of Proverbs, you see the way they use imagery. Proverbs chapter 30 talks about devouring the poor. And it doesn't mean you're grabbing a dude and just chomping into his leg. What does it mean? It means you're making economic decisions. You're making social decisions. You're approaching the city and using the city in the way, what? That exploits people who have less advantage than you. That's what it means. And rather than being hyperbole and dramatic, what it's doing is shortening the cycle. Your decisions are reaching these outcomes. It's just far enough away that you don't have to look at it, but here's what's really happening. You see that? And that's what he's doing in this text when he's like, hey, let's wait in ambush. Let's kill people. What you basically see in this text is the path of folly is let's pursue pleasure with no thought of price. That's the call of the recruiter over here. Let's go for mine without a thought of consequences. And there's a promise of excitement. There's an adrenaline rush. Let's lie in wait. Let's ambush a dude. There's the intoxication of power. We'll swallow them alive. We'll eat them whole. We're like Sheol, which is the grave, right? There's promise of big gains. We'll find precious goods. We'll fill our houses with plunder. And there's promise of acceptance. Come with us. Throw in your lot among us. We'll have one purse. You'll have some people you belong to. You'll get fun. You'll get power. You'll get fame. And you'll get acceptance if you come with us. Pursue your pleasure. You do you, and don't think about the price. Make your choices without considering the consequences. And that's what verse 16 is about. Their feet run to evil. They make haste to shed blood. Why do they do that? Because they don't fear a God that's gonna judge them, and they don't feel a people that could hurt them. So in the middle of that, they're like, there's no God that's gonna judge us, and there's no people that can stop us. So I'm going to go for mine, and it really doesn't matter what anybody else thinks. That's the message of foolishness. One quote said it this way, powerful people see the world as a place to be conquered. vain artists as a stage from which to win applause. The covetousness as a place of transferring wealth from one bank account to their own. Sinners love wealth and use people. The saints love people and use their wealth to help others. And that's basically the path of foolishness, is saying, I'm gonna use people for money, sex, power, and acceptance. And the path of wisdom says, I'm gonna use my money, acceptance, and ability to serve people. At the end of the day, it's a lot about love, right? And that can be you lying in wait to ambush somebody, or it can be you ambushing somebody online. Or it can be you ambushing someone in a peer group. Man, she looks terrible today. Ugh, girl, right? Why are you doing that? Because when I step on her, I elevate me, right? You're right here. Do you see it? It's I disadvantage you for the benefit of me. And I don't worry about if that might get back to you, hurt your feelings, discourage you, cost our friendship. That's too much to think about. I'm just gonna think about right now, if I make fun of you, I win and look great, right? Do you see it? That's the idea. Now there's recruits on these roads. Wisdom's got a path, folly's got a path, and they're actively seeking recruits. And the recruits are in verse 22. It says, how long, O simple ones, will you love being simple? How long will scoffers delight in their scoffing and fools hate knowledge? These are the three people on the path of folly. You got the simple, you got the fool, and you got the scoffer. The simple is cool. It's the word, if you want to get geeky about Hebrew, it means the word open, right? It can mean gullible or easily led. There's a verb form of the word, and it means to fool or seduce. It's actually the verb used in verse 10. My son, if sinners entice you, do not consent. And so this book starts with talking about the person who's standing at the crossroads and they're easily tricked. And that's the person that's being spoken to at the beginning of this. There's someone that's gullible. Proverbs 14:15 says the simple believes everything, but the prudent gives wise thought to his steps. They don't think things through, the simple. Proverbs 22 says, the prudent sees danger and hides himself. The simple go on and suffer for it because they don't weigh decisions. Basically, it's used as a synonym in the book for youth, young person. And that doesn't mean baby. In this book, it means somebody that's just starting out in life. They're of marriageable age. They're entering their first career. They're between the ages of, 18 to 35, something like that. They're right in that zone that I've heard there's a few of you in this room. So it's you. It's synonymous with youth at the very front end of life, right? But it's the kind of person, and some of you know people like this, that it's the kind of person that you go, man, they could go a lot of different ways. Like it's that friend you have in high school that you're like, in 5 years, they could either be like really involved in their church or like in a cult or in a gang. And I don't really know which way it's gonna go. Kind of depends on who finds them first. You know what I mean? It's that friend that you're like, man, I'm just not sure. It's the freshman. It's basically who it is. If you want to think about school, it's the freshman. Like I remember when I showed up freshman year of college, I would imagine if you gave all of us a test, like, hey, in the cold light of day, sterile lights, take this quiz. Is it wise for a young woman to get blackout drunk in a room full of strangers that she doesn't know? I would imagine they would say, no, not wise. We would all say that. But I remember as a freshman, I got invited to a party and I show up. And as soon as I show up, there's a girl walking in the door and I walk in, and I'm like, hi. And she's like, and then she falls over on the coffee table and she's just splayed out. And her friend's like trying to help her get her world together. But you're like, this is bad. This is a bad start socially. All right. And you go, how did this happen? I don't think someone presented her this option earlier in the day. Well, let's see. We have a dinner reservation at 7:30, or you can go to a strange house in kind of this dirty little apartment, and you can drink a bunch of liquid someone hands you until you fall out, blackout drunk, and puke on yourself. Does that sound like an option you would like to pursue? And she's like, oh, yes, I'll take the second one. Thank you. I don't think that's happened. What happened? What happened was a little bit of peer pressure, a little bit of friends are doing it, a little bit of, oh, I want to be liked. Oh, I want to be accepted. Oh, I want you to like me. Oh, I can't see. And then on we go. And you go, you're not a bad person, but you're fragile. I watched a video just recently. It was Mr. T describing the roots of his catchphrase, I pity the fool. If you remember Mr. T, but someone asked him, where did I pity the fool come from? And he told Conan O'Brien, he said, I pity the fool came from the Bible. And Conan's like, what? And he said, yeah, pity means genuine concern. And a fool is someone who's not making wise choices. And Conan's like, I thought it meant you want to punch someone in the face. And he was like, no, it means I have concern for you because you're not making wise choices. And Conan was like, I had no idea so much thought went into the catchphrase, I pity the fool. But he got it from Proverbs, right? Mr. T, right in here, made a living off this, right? Are they without hope? No, you're trainable. If you're simple, the book's written to you. Proverbs 1:4 says to give prudence to the simple. This whole book is about trying to help the simple person. The simple person is gullible but trainable. They can learn. That's why wisdom cries out in Proverbs 9, whoever's simple, turn in here. The one who lacks sense, come eat my bread, drink my wine, learn from me. Wisdom calls to the simple, come this way. But later in verse 9, the woman folly calls out too. You who are simple, turn in here. Stolen water is sweet and bread eaten in secret is pleasant. The gullible person is right on the front end of their career, right on the front end of their relationships. The way you pursue a lot of these things can be swayed by the crowd. There's a fragility to you. And if you're not careful, the default setting is folly. Proverbs 14 says the simple inherit folly. You don't work for an inheritance. You don't strive for an inheritance. It just shows up. You can't stay at the crossroads. Everybody moves in life. And if you stay empty-headed, you become wrong-headed, is what the book will say. The simple inherits folly. It's coming for you. And there's a culpability to that because it's a heart issue. That's what wisdom says. How long, simple, will you love being simple? See, the thing about simple, it's not about mental capacity. It's about heart's humility. Being simple is not about a lack of mental capacity. It's about a lack of heart humility. Am I willing to pursue gaining wisdom, right? What's careful is we got to watch our affections because there is something attractive. Stolen water is kind of sweet. Bread eaten in secret is fun. Gossip is kind of cool. Feeling like you got something over on somebody, you figured something out they didn't and you elevated while they still down does feel good. There's something nice about this. And the seductress calls to the folly guy and he's just like, that sounds like a great idea. If he was taking a quiz about adultery, he would probably say that's not a great idea. But you turn the lights just right, you get some music on, and suddenly you're like, you know, but maybe it'll work for me. And you go, it's fragile, it's dangerous. Why? Because it's appealing to your affections, and your affections are bent, right? The simple inherit folly unless they make a different move. I remember when I was in college, my senior year, there was this organization, very hard to get into it, the business school at Texas A&M called the Fellows. And it was basically, they taught you how to get a great job, right? So they literally brought someone that taught you how to wear a suit, where to put your name tag, put it on the right so when you shake hands, they remember your name, right? And that kind of stuff. And like how to eat properly, how to interview properly. It was this how to crush interviews, basically Fellows. And they brought CEOs in, Wall Street, all these different people to come talk to us and teach us. And I remember sitting in that room and I'm like, these people are the highest caliber. I really don't know how I got in here. I was literally like slipped in the bottom. They're like, well, we gotta have someone to kind of pull this down. And so they brought me. But I remember sitting in that room with all these people, and it was fascinating because they would bring some person that was like a successful CEO crushing their business, and they would tell them how to be a generous person and a person filled with honor and a person who's kind. And you could see everyone like, that's so beautiful. That's so inspirational. A girl next to me cried. It's like, I want to be just like her when I grow up. And I'm like, me too. And just we're all listening. And then you'd see other guys that were like, I made a first million when I was 25. Why? Because if someone gets in your way, you knock them down. Someone, you attack first, punch first, no mercy, sir. You know, that kind of stuff. And everyone's like, yeah, man, you got to get after him. You got to get him. And I'm just like, oh man, like this room could go either way. And it's not about their mental capacity. They're smart. It's about the heart's affections, right? It's not mental capacity. It's the heart's humility. What seat am I going to learn at? What voice am I going to listen to? I was like, these people, some of them I think are going to be my best friends. Some of them I think might shiv me for a quarter. Like you just tweak the dials a little bit and it gets there fast. That's the simple. You stand at the crossroads, impressionable. And then really the rest will go quick because they kind of follow from there. The next one's called the fool. And you'll see, the reason I'm telling you this is because if you read through Proverbs with us, and I hope you do, and we'll put the slide up, which you can text in to follow that. But I hope you'll follow with us because you'll see the fool pop up everywhere. And the fool, I love this. The wooden translation, when it was just used for physical things, the Hebrew word for fool is the word thick. It was used to describe legs, right? And then it came to mean mind. You're thick-headed, right? But again, it wasn't about your brain, it's about your heart. Who the fool is the person who's more hardened to being taught, right? This person doesn't even think about consequences. Okay, I'll drink that, right? This person's like, this probably isn't a good idea, but, right? So this person's a bit more culpable and a bit more stubborn. The fool lacks discernment. It's interesting. Proverbs 15:14 says, the heart of him who has understanding seeks knowledge, but the mouth of the fool feeds on folly. They just believe anything. Any resource, anything you send their way, they'll believe it, right? And then Proverbs 18 says, a fool takes no pleasure in understanding, but only in expressing his opinion. How do you spot a fool? They're the person that when you try to educate them on something, they say, I know. That's like the call of the fool. What's the fool's call in the wild? The fool goes, I know, right? Like that's, the fool already knows it all. The fool's the person that just wants to tell you something. Even if it's a subject they know nothing about. Have you ever had that person do that? Like you're an expert in the subject and no one's told them that yet. And they're like, oh, well, what I heard is, and they start educating you and you're like, dude, you are telling me like JV information. And then you got to decide, do I like pull my lightsaber out? And you're like, well, interesting. Right, and do you try to answer a fool according to his folly? May not go so well for you, right? And yet the fool is a person who lacks restraint. A fool gives full vent to his spirit. Proverbs 29:11, right? Why? Because there's a lack of humility to them, right? I love Proverbs 18:6. As a fool's lips walk into a fight, his mouth invites a beating. That's Proverbs you're meant to think about for a while. And I'm like, his mouth invites a beating. You know what I mean? You're like, that's awesome. The fool's someone who just keeps talking. And then you're like, oh man, this ain't gonna go good for you, right? Like, if you got somebody that's always in a fight, always in drama, you ever had a friend like that? Where they're like, dude, everyone around me is so stupid. Everyone at my office is so dumb. Everybody, and you're like, if the common denominator in every relationship you're in is that they're all dumb, what is the common denominator? Is it you? I'm just asking questions. It just seems like everywhere you go, foolishness and drama follows. I don't know. I'm just asking. But again, the fool in Proverbs is not mentally deficient. They're morally deficient. The fool loves folly, it'll say. It's not a lack of mental capacity. It's a lack of heart humility. It's not about aptitude. It's about attitude, right? It's not about the mind's information. It's about the heart's inclination. You know, one of the best examples of this is Forrest Gump, right? Look at his life. Now, sure, he gets a little lucky. You're like, oh, he just happens to be great at ping pong, right? But what's the whole thrust of the movie Forrest Gump? That the person with diminished mental capacity but strong moral conviction just keeps finding a way to win. And as you see him navigate all these very real crises, he always tends to float to the top. And there's a serenity around him, and others are lifted by his presence. Even though at his first presentation, they make fun of him for being slow. It doesn't matter how slow his mind is. It's about the courage of his convictions. It's that humility that leads to success. Meanwhile, the people around him who are wise do what? As they run into calamity, they start to make decisions that are self-destructive, relationally, sexually, financially, with addiction. And they look up and they're so smart, they're so wise, but they rage at the storm, right? A fool's own folly ruins their life, but their heart rages against the Lord, the book Proverbs will say. Right? And what happens to them? What happens is the big question in front of all of us. Will you be humble to gain wisdom? Will you find the serenity that comes in joining the person who is humble enough to be simple, right? So it's a moral issue. They lack humility. And what's dangerous about it is our text will say the simple are killed by their turning away and the complacency of fools destroys them. I know the decisions I'm making aren't great. And some of us are there today. You go, you know, I've just accepted I'm going to handle money a certain way. I'm just not going to think about it. I know there's probably a smarter way to handle some of these relational turmoil in my family, but I don't want to hassle with it. I know there's probably a healthier way to talk to the opposite sex, but that I just, you know what? That's not what my friends are doing. And you just look and you continue to spurn wisdom. And it's that complacency of fools that undoes them. It's a dangerous path that ultimately ends to the mocker. And we won't go a long way on the mocker. I love the mocker or the scoffer. Proverbs 21 says, the scoffer is the name of the arrogant, haughty man who acts with arrogant pride. I just love that because the Bible's so just eloquent and beautiful. But even when they're describing the scoffer, like the scoffer is just the name of this arrogant, haughty man who's just arrogant and arrogant. And it's the someone who hates rebuke. If this is the person who doesn't think about consequences, this is the person who resists thinking about consequences. This is the person who laughs at the idea of consequences. You don't tell me, I tell you. This is Ebenezer Scrooge, right? I mock you, I do it my way, right? This is the Godfather, probably the perfect path of this, right? Young sweet Michael, you're cheering for him, starts to make some swayed decisions. By the end, he's exing out his brother, right? You broke my heart, Fredo. And you're like, dude, you're killing your brother, right? And you watch the path of fools, right? This is Scarface, right? You go from just trying to earn a dime and survive to snorting a mountain of coke and telling people to say hello to your little friend as you fire off this gun in the middle of the room. Some of you know what I'm talking about. You're right on the edge of being Scarface. It is interesting, though, if you look at popular films, they love to show this path. The person who starts out in life and you're rooting for them and they start to make bad decisions and they just wade in. Little decisions shape a destiny and you see them to become even the thing they hate. What's even weird is when the movie Godfather came out or even Scarface, they wanted to show people this is not a healthy way to leave life. At the end, if you remember when the scene closes at Godfather, what happens? He's alone. He's lost his wife, lost his children, lost his family, lost everything. He's isolated. It's meant to be a tragedy. Scarface, he ends in blood with all his friends dead and gone. And yet, it's fascinating that in society, we tend to elevate and celebrate those. Isn't that weird? So I love when Denzel Washington, when he made a movie about a gangster, he said, show the wreckage of people on drugs in the street. If you're going to show me riding around in a Bentley, show the person who's ODing in front of their kids. He said, I don't want to glamorize the path of folly. I don't. It's little decisions that elevate me at the cost of society end up ugly. It's always ugly in the light of day to be a mocker and a scoffer. A scoffer sets the city aflame. Do you see it? Now, are many of us in this room there? I don't know. But there's a path in front of us, and the paths go different directions. This path, their feet run to evil and make haste to shed blood. It's a morally evil path. But it's not just evil. The Proverbs will go on to say it's also kind of dumb. It's interesting in the book of Proverbs, it says, in vain is a net spread in the sight of any bird, but these men lie in wait for their own blood. They set an ambush for their own lives. It's saying, if you're trying to trap a bird, you don't set a real obvious net in front of it because the bird will be like, I'm not doing that, right? But he's like, the fool is so arrogant in their heart. There's like, nothing's going to catch me. Nothing can stop me. I can do whatever I want, right? And you go, man, that is the essence of foolishness. It's fascinating. Chris Rock, who is so brilliant as a comedian, his latest comedy, he talks about that. He's like, I got so proud, I was unfaithful to my wife, and I thought, it doesn't matter, I'm Chris Rock. Those rules don't apply to me. But now his marriage is over, and he's standing there on stage begging people, don't be like me. Don't do what I did. Don't go down this road, right? And yet, as many people say that, still many of us will walk down the road of bad decisions in how we do relationships, right? The essence of foolishness, if I can put it in a nutshell, is this. Trying to divorce decisions from consequences. That's the essence of foolishness. I'm going to divorce my decisions from their inevitable consequences. That won't ever get me. That's what a fool does, right? I can get away with this. I won't get caught. No one can judge me. That's the idea. I watched a court case a few years ago, and it was some young men, I think high school age kids, that had sexually assaulted a girl at a party, videotaped it, sent it out to all their friends, and would laugh about it at school. And so after all of that horrible experience and social rejection and all of that difficulty, she took her life. And I remember watching the court case, and as the guilty verdict is rendered, one of the young men instantly becomes a child again. You just see him, suddenly he looks like a baby. He just starts crying like a baby. And they put a mic in front of him, and he says, "I didn't mean for this to happen." And you know what's crazy is I believed him. He was a minor. I'm like, I believe you didn't mean for this to happen. But that doesn't make you innocent. You're guilty. What it makes you is a fool. Because you made those decisions, but you just kept saying, no, it certainly won't lead to what's an inevitable consequence. So I believe you didn't want that to happen to her, but you did everything to lead to that place. Your decisions are completely consistent with that outcome. We get to control input. We don't get to control outcome. That's the humility that the Bible's putting in front of us. We don't make the rules. We can control inputs in the world. We don't control outcomes. Somebody else does. And if you try to say, well, I'm going to put this into the world and bad won't come out of it, you can't reap or sow the wind and then pray for a crop failure, bro. If you sow the wind, you're going to reap the whirlwind. That's coming for you, right? And I'll talk to young people about that. They'll talk about the way they're making relational decisions. Man, I really want a healthy marriage. I want to be there for my kids. I want to be a success financially. I want to really serve people. I want to help. And you look at the decisions you're making, you're like, none of these decisions are leading there. Not a single one of them is consistent with that lifestyle. You're like somebody who's putting like butter and flour and baking soda into a pan and different stuff and then putting it in the oven and going, oh man, I didn't mean to bake a cake. What do you mean? You've actually followed the instructions exactly to get that outcome. The essence of foolishness is trying to divorce decisions from consequences, right? The wise person is the person who says, hey, I don't want that, so I shouldn't do this, right? I don't want to go there, so I don't want to go here. This is the way of everyone who's greedy for unjust gain takes away the life of their possessor, and I don't want it to take my life. They will eat the fruit of their own way. They'll have the fill of their own devices. I don't want the simplicity and complacency of fools to destroy me. So what do we do? Well, what's interesting about this text, I don't know if you read this, wisdom is kind of goes dark on us. Did you notice that in the text? Wisdom's like, you didn't listen to me. You didn't hear me. You didn't repent. So I'm going to laugh at you. I'm going to mock at you. And you're just like, wow, that's cold-blooded wisdom. Yikes, was kind of looking for some redemption, right? But here's the good thing. And some people are disturbed by this in the book of Proverbs that it name calls. Because we don't like name calling in our society. As you read through the book of Proverbs, it'll say that. Like, hey, do you just vent your spirit all the time? Well, it's because you're a fool. You're like, what? How dare you? Right? Like, we don't like those labels because they feel so final. You're going to slap a label on me? You're simple. You're a fool. You're a mocker. It feels like a death sentence. You're labeling me forever. And that's a bad thing. The thing about the book of Proverbs, though, is it just wants to give you real data in the moment. It's a hard deal. Like, I remember I had a friend go over to Africa and play soccer. And he was there running around with these guys. And it was a big wake-up call for him. He just couldn't keep up with them. And finally, at one moment, he was like, hey, guys, time out. Let's take a little break. And as he said that, one guy came up to him and was like, David, is it because of your obesity that you want to take a break? And he was like, we call it big boned in America. Or when I was trying to get back in shape, somebody gave me a video, and I love it because it's an Eastern European showing you how to work out, and he's doing ridiculous stuff, right? Like, he's doing push-ups in gymnastics rings with his feet in the air. He's like, so what you're going to want to do is arch your back. And you're like, really? But then what's interesting is he's like, if you can't do this because of weakness. And you're just like, no one says that in America. The way we say it is, well, if this progression is hard for you, we can adapt some of the progressions and that'll be really good. And so, and then you don't even say you, if this progression's hard for us, or if this progression's too challenging for us, we can try this one. I mean, just anything to mitigate it. But that Proverbs is that friend that's like, you put on a couple. All right? You can't do it because of weakness. And if you're proud, you're like, you don't know me. But if you're not, you're like, you know, yeah, yeah. Yes, I got to start eating more avocados. Or what's the new thing now? Kombucha. Wisdom gives you stark reality, but it doesn't give you much grace. But here's the cool thing is, the Bible, this is where the road leads, but if you look through the Bible, there's off-ramps at every road, every single one. So when Jesus was sitting with a group of people, I love this about Jesus. He's sitting and it says he's with a room full of sinners. And you're like, what does that mean? And you're like, that means Jesus wasn't afraid to show up with that crowd. He loved that crowd. He's kicking it with that crowd. It's like he's just hanging. It's like this one time he's hanging with them, which was a normal thing for Jesus, to hang with people whose lives were a mess. And some religious people showed up and they were judging him for that. And he was like, let me tell you a story. He's like, at the end of the day, this whole path thing isn't about the religious or the non-religious. One path says the offerings of a scoffer are abomination to the Lord. There's scoffers in church. This isn't about religious or non-religious. It's about your heart. And Jesus is in this place and he's looking at these people who are arrogant and proud in the way they're doing religion. And he's looking at people who've made a mess of their lives. And he's like, let me tell all of you what God's like. And really, he's talking to the proud guys in the back. Let me tell you the heart of the God that you're preaching, because I don't know if you're getting it. And he tells a story. There's a son, told his father, I know you get inheritances when you die, but I'm done with you. Give me mine now. I'm out. Very disrespectful. Blows up his family unit. Takes all that money, invests it poorly. Doesn't start up a business. What does he do? It says he squandered it on riotous living. He went to the city and went crazy, right? He's like, I'm gonna die young. And he just went for it, did whatever he wanted to do, right? And what happened at the end? At some point, the party's over. At some point, you wake up the next morning. And for him, it was a lot of mornings later, he was out of money. And when you're out of money, oftentimes you start running low on friends. And so suddenly he says, I'm in a foreign land and I'm working with pigs and the pigs are eating better than me. And he's in that moment where wisdom says to you, you will eat the fruit of your labors. You will reap the whirlwind, you know? And he was feeling that like, I have reaped it. I have reaped it. I am the mocker of Proverbs 2. What does God do with that guy? What does he do with you if you walked all the way down this path? Do you know what Jesus says? Jesus said, this guy came to his senses. Says, there's food at my dad's house. But I don't deserve to be there anymore. Maybe he'll let me work there. It's worth a shot. So he shows up, starts walking to his dad's house. Like some of you walked into this church. You go, maybe I'll just give it a shot. It's a church in Howard Theater. Maybe they're not super judgy. What I love about that is he starts walking towards his dad's house. And his dad, it says, and this is my favorite part of the whole text. It says, while he was still a long way off. And some of you, that's you today. While you were still a long way off, what does God think of you? What he does, he hitches up his robe and he starts running. He runs for that boy. When he gets there, his son's trying to get the speech out. Father, I don't deserve to be one of your hired. Boom! And he gets hit. Because dad wraps him up and hugs him. And is like, get a robe. We're dressing this kid up. Get some sandals. Start getting the party ready. He's like, Dad, I don't deserve to be like, we're throwing a party for him. Wouldn't even let him finish the repentance speech. He says, my son was dead and he's now alive. And that's God, right? I remember being in ministry and we had a kid. He was like, Ben, he said, I wasn't the guy that stumbled in. I wasn't the guy that was kind of among some friends that were leading me to some bad choices. He said, I was the ringleader of a pretty crazy group of people. They actually called me the captain. That was his nickname. He said, because if you want to go crazy, you follow me. He said, and one day these sweet Christian girls that lived in the house next to me kept saying like, we're praying for you. And he's like, okay. He said, and then one day he saw where this path was going and it scared him. So he pulled out the Bible that they gave him and he opened it up to the prophets. He just threw it open and that scared him more. And basically he arrived at Proverbs 2. I don't want to reap the whirlwind. I don't want to reap the whirlwind. You know, it's like, I don't want to be here. And you know what? God loves that person. Because the minute you admit your need, you are barreling down the path of wisdom. and you're doing it following the Son of God, Jesus Christ, who, if he had a chance to tell you a story, would tell you, while you're a long way off, the Father's running for you. That's why you're here. You're not here by accident. You're here because God's calling you. You're here because the Son of God came for you. You're here because you have a good Father who sent his best for you. All of us like sheep have gone astray, each one to his old way. In the Old Testament, they broke every rule, every law, everything, and they went into exile, slaves of foreign leadership. And while they were guilty, God repeated the words of wisdom. While they were guilty, he said through the prophet, I'm coming to you anyway, and I will pour out my spirit on you, and I will give you a new heart and move you to obey my decrees. What you need is to not turn over a new leaf. You need a new heart. And that's what God's offering today. To any who will come to him, you say, I need you. I don't know the way to go. I don't know the way to grip the rope. I don't know how to get from this place to that. I really don't. But I know if I throw up empty hands, you come running. I know if while I'm still a long way off, if I come to my senses, you come chasing. I know that Jesus Christ didn't come to give me a list of rules. He came to give me a new heart. And so come grab me and lead me and teach me and walk me down the path of life.
If you were encouraged by today's talk and believe it would be uplifting to others, then be sure to rate us and hit subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you stream your podcasts. To experience other talks, videos, and live gatherings, visit us online at PassionCityChurch.com or download the Passion Movement app. And again, thanks for listening to the Passion City Church podcast.